Talking home renovation, repair, and inspection issues today with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializes in residential renovation projects, and John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. John's involved with historic restoration, water issues, and he's also a licensed home inspector. And fellas, welcome back. You're liable to get a lot of business today, I think, here.
Well, it's lovely to be back in paradise.
Oh, and I'm willing to bet basements are going to be on a lot of people's minds. So we'll go right to the phones. And Nino is up first from Lake Geneva.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Oh,
need your help. I had some rain seepage. One part of my basement, unfortunately, my rain gutters were clogged and water was shooting straight down to the side of the home, and some of my magic tricks and supplies were ruined, and I learned that the hard way, and I freaked out and had some suggestions, but the pros and cons of what would you suggest? Maybe the tar treatment around the home or packed sand, I hear.
So you've got water running down the walls and running into the basement through the walls because your gutters are, your downspouts were clogged.
Right, on one part.
And
right.
You've unclogged the downspouts.
Yeah, that's the first thing you want to do is unclog the downspouts. And if you've got a horizontal run on your downspouts, get the water running away from your house.
Right.
Have you had water before in your basement?
No, that I hadn't.
Because, you know, a lot of times, even in weather like this, where the water table's rising and rising, a lot of water damage in basements comes in because the gutters are not correct. They're, you know, functioning correctly. Another problem is that the ground doesn't swale away from the house or doesn't, you know, so that runoff can run away from the house, surface runoff, that is.
Okay.
So those are the first two things I do. If you've never had problems before, you know, you could fix the gutters. If you ever have another problem, you know, make sure you keep your materials away from, you have magic tricks?
Yeah, I'm a professional magician, and gosh, it was a horror story when I went downstairs and realized, just a little bit of water, you know, is ruining the stuff that I had. And, it's an old Montgomery Ward home back from the 60s, and I didn't know if there was anything in particular. I know it's a unique situation with that home, but I'm like, no, that must have no bearing on it. Maybe I should get that treatment, because it did leak again last week, and the gutters are fixed. So you know how you hear from the wife as to...
So it's leaked after the gutters were repaired.
Yeah, also. Right. Oh. So I didn't know if there was an opening in there that I can pack in there, or is that a major home restoration?
Well, you have a concrete foundation or
yes.
block?
Actually, no. I'm sorry. It's block. It's cinder block.
Cinder block.
Cinder block is a very heavy sponge. But
yeah, it's a poor,
it
very
is
porous
sponge. I think there's a couple of ways you can take a look at this, Nino. First, you could put a water collection system inside the basement for not a lot of money, maybe $2,000.
Okay.
They're going to come in with a concrete saw, cut about 18 inches away from the outside wall all the way around, take out some soil, put in some drain pipe, put in some washed stone, cement over it. And then they can actually put in what's called cactus board or other things next to the wall. So there's a little opening. So if water actually runs in through a crack in the wall, it goes down through this plastic into this new drain tile.
Wow.
And then pump the water outside. That is going to be much less expensive than $60 to $70 per lineal foot to dig up the exterior of the house and put on a system.
Wow.
Yeah. Unless, of course, you do it yourself with a shovel, which, which I don't think will magically
be done. Or if you have a magic way to do that.
My magic wand.
Yeah, I think that's probably a pretty good idea. They get a sump pump in there, and that takes care of it.
That's right. And Ken's correct also about checking the exterior of the house. The rule of thumb, and which is actually the minimum standard in the Uniform Dwelling Code, is that you really want 5 inches of pitch in the first 10 feet. So you want about a half inch per foot all the way around your house. So add a bit of soil, and if it is a case where the soil is just plain saturated, as it is in a lot of places in the state, then this interior water collection system is going to be a minimal investment. Basement still may get damp. You may have a little water running down the walls, but at least you're not going to have a foot of water on your floor, and it's not going to cost you a lot.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. And Sharon in Janesville's up next. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. How about another basement question?
Okay.
I have a leaking basement wall, but I think it's being caused by tree roots that are pushing the cinder block in, and so there's those there's a slight bulge in my wall.
Bulge in the wall.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, my husband thinks that you can hire somebody to realign the cinder block by, like, pushing it back in and pointing it. And I don't want to get involved with, I guess I want it done right, and I don't really know what to do besides take the tree out so it doesn't keep pushing, obviously. But then I don't know what to do afterwards.
That's probably something you're going to have to address the tree issue, because if that's really what's happening, no matter what you do inside, the problem's just going to exacerbate.
Mr. Tree
over time.
Has to go, probably.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
And then the next thing you can do is you could, if the wall isn't too bad, and you'll need a structural engineer on this to look at this wall, because if it's not too bad, they could put in what's called a dead man, and a pier of sorts, and that can support the foundation wall in the area that's moving. Okay. Is it cracked and should be? If it's bulging in, it would probably look like it's cracked at the joints and such.
I think so. It's in a rental property, and I haven't actually seen it. My renter just told me.
Oh,
okay. Well, you need to go over and take a look at it. Make sure that bulge is really correlates very well to the tree roots, though, before you start on any repairs.
Yeah.
And as Ken said, there are devices you can use to hold the wall in place. Another one's called a flexural member, and we design those all the time for people.
Okay.
But if it is a small area, you can actually have a mason come in and take blocks out and reset them grout the wall.
Great.
I've had masons in Madison that have replaced the entire front wall on houses without doing a whole lot of digging on the exterior. So it is possible, but you're going to have to figure out exactly what the scope of the problem is first, and Ken's probably correct.
So who
call to a structural engineer down there. Just take out the Janesville Yellow Pages, go to engineering, find structural, go to a small company, a one-man shop.
Okay, structural engineer, not a general contractor or a mason to start with.
I think it's always good to start with an engineer.
A structural engineer.
Right.
Okay.
And I can tell you that the whole side of my house, wasn't it, Ken?
Yeah.
We had to replace the basement.
Good chunk of it.
A pretty good chunk of the whole basement wall. And seemed to, I was surprised at how smoothly it went, to be perfectly
extremely
honest.
Extremely expensive?
No, it really isn't.
It wasn't that bad.
that was the cheapest part
of my whole...
When you describe the work, it sounds like, oh my God, what are we going to do? But then when we actually get it done, it's not too big, too painful
no,
of a
it
project.
Isn't.
So
I was surprised.
Especially with the CMUs. CMU is a concrete block. So with concrete block, it's a little bit easier than with poured concrete. But,
I would think.
Yeah. Good luck to you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Sharon. Appreciate it. And let's see, Mary in Madison is up next. Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I'm going to attempt to get us out of the basement, although we may end up back there.
All right.
We have struggled for many, many years with this 100-year-old-plus house and its eave trough system. We've had them screened. We've had new ones put in. Regardless, it's one of those very steep, old-fashioned roofs. And when there's a hard rain, there's rain just sheeting from all sides of the house. Consequently, it's been sitting in a pool of water off and on for many years. I understand that we perhaps could have tried putting more dirt around the house, but it's never been clear to me how that impacts the windows in the cellar. It seems to me that's going to make things much worse, because now we'll have basement windows covered with saturated soil. But my question is this. I had the great good luck to live in Montana for several years in an area where they'll get 25 feet of snow in a year. And I was really intrigued by the fact that there don't seem to be eave troughs there. Everybody seems to have metal roofs, unless they're older homes, with a big overhang. And I've had it in mind since eave troughs seem to be completely inadequate almost all the time, and they're constantly being jammed. Of course, we got a lot of trees around the house, too. I don't see any reason why you can't design a house with a big overhang like the ones I saw out there. If you had to, I'd be more than willing to put a cement-lined trough around the house. So I'd like to know, one, when you've already got a lot of mold around the plaster, this black mold, which I assume is a combination of mildew and real black mold, there must be even more behind the walls. Is there anything to do here besides literally burn the house down? No. I understand when it starts to dry out, things get much worse. And secondly, gutters seem like such a primitive, incompetent system. Why can't we just have an overhang? Thank you.
All right.
Well, Frank Lloyd Wright would agree with you.
Yeah.
People do it all the time. You see that
he always designed his house, and most of the other prairie architects designed houses with large overhangs. And the idea was that they shed the water 4 or 5 feet away from the house.
You see that in the tropics a lot. You know, long sweeping overhangs protects from the sun and also allows water to come off the roof and it's.
Yep. The
and
whole
away
bungalow
from the house.
Idea from India, the bungalow house that has the little large bit, eaves.
And the problem up here, down there they don't have basements. Up here we have basements. Right. So if you don't, if you can't move the water away from the house.
But then, if you've got a 100-year-old Victorian, it's going to be awful hard to add a 6-foot overhang to it. I think Mary needs to maybe check with a good gutter person. Their gutters come in a lot of different sizes, and it's pretty easy to calculate the kind of hourly rainfall you're going to get off a roof. Sometimes you have gutters that are actually adequately sized, and you don't have enough downspouts.
And that's the problem I see quite often.
That's right. A lot of these old houses, we wanted the water to go into a cistern, so we only had one or two downspouts because we wanted it all going into the cistern. So Mary may find that she really needs to add 2 or 3 downspouts, and then that'll get the water away from the house.
And or enlarge the downspouts she has, because depending on the style of gutter, she can enlarge the downspouts and move more water out of each one.
And we put Master Shield is the product name we put over our gutters that works really, really well to keep the leaves out and still lets the water come in. So
that's a rain guard or a leaf guard system.
Yeah,
course,
it's a leaf guard system. Mm-hmm. It lets the rain in and keeps everything else out.
Yeah,
I remember when I saw it; it was very clean. So
yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Jen. Because
Mary
there's
also,
a lot of issues she's got.
Mary also mentioned mold, and
yeah, that's more.
I think you were trying to ask her a question, Ken, but I guess she's rung off.
Mm-hmm. No, I'm here.
Oh, good, okay. You are there. All right, well,
I'm here, and with the greatest respect for your speakers, we had the gutters all redone a few years ago. But guess what? Of course, there's several cisterns, and this very reputable firm said, and I have no reason not to believe them, that we didn't need more downspouts. But that's exactly what's happening. One, this was set up for a cistern system. Mm-hmm. They're two right by the house. And secondly, they weren't out here during a downpour, and I didn't realize, given that it's one of the top firms in town, that we still didn't have enough downspouts, but we clearly do not. Secondly, the mold situation is so bad now. I understand we can have all that drywall ripped out and have vapor guard put in, but honestly, looking at what's on the outside of the walls, I can only imagine how horrible it must be inside.
Mary, where is the mold?
It's all, coming up from the basement stairs, and now it's crawling up to the plaster on the first floor walls.
Inside?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, boy.
So we must have some seepage going into the walls of the house.
Mm-hmm.
What sort of siding is on the house, Mary?
The edges of the roof.
Sorry? What sort of siding?
When the gutters back up, there's now water, as of this year, coming in under the shingles on the very edges, which is now starting to run down between the walls. And I don't think at this point, we'll re-roof the house. But last winter just finished off the fragile part of the roof. We had so much ice that built up on top, in the gutters, of course.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, probably tear your gutters off right off the house, too.
So we probably had ice damming last winter because you have an old roof without an ice and water shield on it. So that water got in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And now we've had rainwater get in the wall. So we've managed to wet those walls enough that we may have something interesting going on. And you're also right, Mary, when it dries out, it gets worse because that's when the various fungi offspore is when they start going dormant. You're probably going to need to talk to a mold specialist and have this stuff tested. There are some very good people in the Madison area, and I don't know whether they're in the Yellow Pages, but
mold remediation under
is it under mold remediation?
I think it is.
But there are several very competent people in the Madison area. But it sounds like you better get that checked.
With regard to downspouts, if downspouts are an issue, you can have new downspouts put onto the existing system without it costing an arm and a leg. I mean, they can come in, cut a hole in the bottom of the gutter, put a downspout in, and be done. And you know, a matter of a couple of hours for the whole job, if that's the issue. But sounds like you don't have a lot of confidence in the person that did your gutters. No.
Somebody else could come in, though.
Any gutter installer could do the work. So
good luck.
I wish you luck with that. It sounds like you've got a lot of complicated problems all piled on top of each other.
And thank you again for calling. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg, our guest today as we talk home renovation, repair, and inspection issues. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You have something going on with your home that you'd like our experts to comment on? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison at 263-1890. Dan in Highland is up next, so let's go to Dan. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I have another basement question. I want to dig around the outside of my house and do a low maintenance type thing where I dig out a few feet and put in like your plastic trim and the like, and then put in a type of rock slot way for mowing. It's much easier. But at the same time, while I'm digging, I do have a dry basement, except for I want, as a precautionary thing, I want to put down a type of a drain tile along the whole edge of the house, and whether you're sand or rock or plastic, but I'm just not sure the steps and what to take, and I was wondering if there's a directory or a step-by-step thing on the website you have or anything that I could look at to accomplish this task.
Well, let's see. I think that one place you could probably check, and you should be able to find this at your local library, Dan, is there's a book called Architectural Graphic Standards. And this has all kinds of cross-sectional drawings on almost anything having to do with architecture. And take a look at the foundation drainage section in there. The other thing that you can do is you can actually go online to the state of Wisconsin and look at the Wisconsin Uniform Dwelling Code. And the Uniform Dwelling Code is going to have an area about foundation drains, and it's going to tell you what the minimum is in Wisconsin for new houses. And that'll at least give you a written description of the sort of thing you're looking at. Basically, what you're going to do in a nutshell, Dan, is you're going to put a drain tile that gravity drains into a sump pit in your house where you're going to have a pump that discharges to grade, not to a sewer. You're going to cover that pipe with a silt sock to keep sand and fine silt from getting into it. And then you're going to put wash stone around it. The wash stone is usually 1/2 inch to 1.5 inch in size, and that allows the water through very quickly.
Okay. And I guess my biggest question is, how deep do I want to go down? Do I want to go 2 foot? I've never had, like I said, a water problem in the basement except for one time, and that's when a gutter
failed
overflowed.
On him.
Yeah, ideally, you want to go down to the footing, but if that's 6 or 7 feet deep, you're not going to go that deep. So it sounds like what you're going to do is try to pick up sort of an intermediate drain line that's down 3 or 4 feet. You know, you've got to be very careful when you're digging. I don't know what the soil is in Highland, but you've got to know the angle of repose. You don't want to be 4 or 5 feet down in digging a trench next to your house and have it collapse.
You know, the other thing that you could do is something that John had recommended to Nino is the internal system. You go in underneath the floor in the basement, you cut that out and put your drain tiles in some pit inside the house, and then that avoids having to dig down to the bottom of the footing.
And Dan, how's the drainage around your house? Do you have that 1/2 inch per foot for 10 feet
yep,
around the house?
All the way around. Yep, the pitch is excellent all the way around the house.
Well,
so this would be just as a kind of a precautionary thing while I'm already digging it out.
You know, maybe you don't need it because it is an awful lot of work, Dan. I think your idea of putting in a ground break there and the stone around the house works pretty nicely. Make sure that you've got some... you've got some pitch to the soil under that stone. It doesn't form a dam where you meet the grass. But maybe it just isn't worth your time to put in a drain tile system if you're not really having a problem.
Yeah. Even all this weather, nothing.
you are lucky.
I'd buy a lottery ticket this week, Dan, because you're one of the luckier people in Wisconsin.
Richard in Taylor County, your turn now. Hi, Richard.
Hi. See, I got a question about my daughter's new construction. They're putting a house in sand country down in Wood County, and their contractor told them they didn't need drain tile. Figured that it would be, they're only going 4 feet in the ground with the basement, but they're going to be building up 4 feet sloping off from the house from that point. But it's pure sand, and I talked to a local contractor here, and he says, if I were you, it already had the footings, and he said he'd dig out trench and put that drain tile around the footings on the inside just for cheap insurance. And So we did that when we put 4-inch drain tile with sock on. We didn't put any gravel around it. This is what he told us to do. And I just wanted your opinion. Did we do something wrong, or if that was a good idea in your opinion, or what?
You really did the correct thing. There's a former University of Wisconsin football coach who has a house in sand on top of a hill.
Mm-hmm.
And his basement flooded on him several times. And he's on top
oh, really?
Of the hill in sand. But the problem with sand is if when you get the kind of rains we've been getting, where you're getting 2 inches in an hour, it goes through that sand so quickly that it can still come into the basement, even in well-drained soil. So I'm in sandy soils, I'm really recommending that waterproofing and drain tile in all cases. So mm-hmm. I think your local contractor really steered you in a correct direction.
Well, how about now? We didn't put any on the outside because now we would have to put bleeders through, I guess, every 8 feet through the footing. Well, the footings were already in. Mm-hmm. Does he think this is going to be sufficient to take any problem if that water table would come up? Or
It's certainly going to help a great deal. The reason for having it on the outside along with the waterproofing system and drain board is to make sure it doesn't come through the snap ties or any cracks in your wall. But you've probably bought 90% of the insurance that you could possibly buy.
Did they put a water barrier on the outside of the foundation?
Well, they're going to put styrofoam on. I believe they're putting some kind of water barrier. I'm not 100% sure, and I know they're putting styrofoam on.
Will they put the water barrier on first and then the styrofoam on the outside of that?
That I'm not sure of. I'll have to ask on that.
What do you recommend, John?
I would recommend going ahead and putting a water barrier on it and then getting... And then styrofoam is really there to insulate the foundation to protect that foundation water barrier.
So,
and on a 4-foot foundation, you're not really looking at a lot of money. And again, then you've bought 95% of the possible insurance you can buy.
Okay, very good. Anyways, could I ask one more question, quick?
Sure.
Okay, they wanted a cold storage under their stoop, and the contractor says that they're going to have nothing but trouble with moisture problems with that. And I talked to this other local contractor. He said, no, he had that under his, and he says, just got to make sure you get the ceiling insulated and get some ventilation in there. Does that sound like good advice? Or?
It depends what you want to store under there. You know, if you're going to put a canoe under there, it's not a problem. If you're going to put your wedding photographs, that you don't want to do that. Are you talking about underneath an open porch, or are you talking about in that crawl space area of the house that's being built?
It's under they got a 10x10 stoop, and it's going to be a concrete, and under there they're going to have cold storage.
And that's accessed from the inside or the outside?
From the inside, but that you know that.
So it's a concrete cap on top of the foundation wall.
Exactly, and that's going to be cold. So I can imagine that being a problem. In the summer, it's going to get hot, I imagine, so that's going to keep the space warm otherwise. And you want to keep it for cold storage, that wouldn't be probably. Well, I guess the thing is there going to be, is that stoop probably going to crack on them? Or you know, are you going to have problems that way, you think? Or?
Well, it is the, I guess if the stoop is on top of a foundation wall and it's thick enough, it shouldn't crack on you. But if it does, you've got water coming into that little area.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm visualizing this correctly, it sounds like there's your foundation wall goes out underneath the stoop area, and so you can see into this area from the basement.
Correct.
And you've got a concrete cap on it, but it's exposed to the concrete cap is exposed to the weather.
Right. There actually is a roof over that stoop, though. I mean, you know, it's just
Over.
So the water can rain
that
in
makes
there.
It, I mean, that makes it easier. Yeah. I would say that. And John may have a different opinion, but I would say I've seen this before, and with an overhang over the top, a concrete pad over the top of that, if you can, I would definitely insulate it because you're insulating your foundation wall anyway, so that you've got the foundation wall insulated. You should, by rights, insulate the bottom of that that stoop, that concrete floor.
Right.
If you don't do that, then you've got a gaping hole in your insulation, which throws you off.
Mm-hmm.
Or don't insulate that whole section. Put a door in there, an insulated door, and keep that completely separate from the rest of the house. I don't know if this answers your question, but it's, you know, I'm looking at John, and he's got definite opinions. Of course, he always has definite opinions.
What do you think, John?
What do you think, buddy?
One of the questions is always these concrete caps do crack unless you use a non-standard concrete, something that doesn't shrink. And you also have to be careful that you've got enough structural steel in it so that it holds together. So the devil's really in the details. I think these rooms are great for storing canning or little wine cellars or whatever. They do tend to be cold and damp, but as long as you don't put anything in there that's going to support fungal growth, it's really okay. But you really do need to make sure that the poured cap on it is very well detailed, and then where that cap meets the wall is often a problem. We see so many of them leak. In fact, there's one in Middleton Hills that they're going to be filling in next week because they cannot get it to stop leaking because they did not do a real good job of attaching it to the house.
But he's got an overhang, so he's got a big overhang.
He's got an overhang, but, well, you get wind-driven rain coming in. You need to make really sure that where this cap meets the house, that it is not going to leak for you. And talk to your contractor and check on the details. If they're properly detailed, they're great. If they aren't well detailed, you end up filling them in with sand.
Okay. How about the venting on it, though? Is that very important, do you think?
It really isn't a crawl space, so code does not require it to be vented. So I would probably, I think I like Ken's idea, I would put nothing in there that can get moldy, and I'd put a door on. And just if the temperature in there, you may find, is going to stay in the 50s.
It's great for wine.
Yeah.
Put the white wine up higher, put the red wine down lower, and you'll be fine.
Okay. Thanks for calling, Richard. Good luck to you. Bob,
in the winter, anyway.
Bob in Madison, your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thank you. I have two questions. First one is, I have pretty good gutters on my house, but there's a few leaks at some of the joints. What's the best material to patch those with?
Okay, you've got the joints of the gutters themselves are leaking?
Yes, not all of them, but just a few.
There's several products, but you can go to pretty much any lumber yard or hardware store and find something that says gutter seal, gutter caulk. It's a very high adhesive caulking it's not highly viscous. It'll ooze its way into the joints, and it's very, it's kind of sticky and yucky to work with, but you can go on the inside of your gutters, make sure they're nice and clean, and put the stuff in, and it should work just fine. It comes in a caulk tube usually, so you'll need a small caulking gun.
Great. And then
When you do this, watch your fingers, because a lot of these guys use screws to put these gutter sections together, and you'll cut yourself. So be careful when you put the stuff in there.
Oh, thank you for mentioning that.
Sure.
Then this house was built in 1960, and we bought it from the original person who had it built 5 years ago, and she said there was never water in the basement, and that's what it looked like. Then, like, three or four years ago, when we had that really heavy rain, we got water in there for the first time. And then, of course, last week, second time. And it just seems like right at where the wall meets the floor, it just kind of seems to be seeping in right there.
Now, John?
That's our typical hydrostatic head pressure, Bob. The soil's getting saturated, and it's seeping up. Is it a finished basement, or is it just a basement?
Just a basement.
If it's just a basement, I have a wet basement all the time at my house, and I just don't worry about it. As long as you don't have things that are going to get moldy, why spend a lot of money if you only have a little bit of water every couple of years? When you sell the house, you're going to have to note that it's maybe leaks every 2-3 years in a heavy rain. But, truthfully, 90% of the basements in Wisconsin leak at one time or another. Sometimes it's only a cup or two, and people don't even know it. But basements are inherently leaky unless you put an awful lot of work into water collection and waterproofing systems.
And then that doesn't even guarantee it.
Nope. There you have it, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. And Paul in Wisconsin Rapids, it's your turn now. Hi, Paul.
Hi, thanks. I got a question. Actually, I haven't listened to this whole conversation. I haven't second thoughts. But for our basement, my wife and I would like to have some type of in-floor heating. There's a product out that you can put it on top of a carpet pad. It's like a foil product that will go on top of the carpet pad beneath the carpet. What's your familiarity with products like this? Energy efficiency, inefficiency, just some general thoughts on it?
Well, I'm not familiar with a foil product that goes on top of carpet pad and underneath carpet, so I'd have to learn a little more about that particular product. But we do put electric floor heating in a lot of homes, and the biggest issue that we have is, well, the biggest problem that we run into is that we either undersize it and we don't have enough heat coming out to actually do the job that it's required to do, or well, that's really the biggest problem. The part of the reason is that you can't in a situation like you have now, you can't really insulate underneath that. So as I think about this, a carpet pad underneath would help provide some insulation to help the heat move up. Does the product that you're talking about have any sort of insulation value of its own on the underside of it?
I'm not familiar with that.
Okay.
Do you know the name of the product, by the way?
Yeah, it comes from Warmly Yours. That's the name of the company that produces it.
That sounds so sweet.
Yeah. So we're, I guess, trying to determine, this would be run on electric and just trying to maintain some energy efficiency, that or considering like a potbelly stove or something like that in the basement, is just to get some of that chill out in the winter.
Well, one of the nicest things about radiant floor heat is that it keeps it. It starts the heat down low, and that's a really nice thing in the wintertime. I've worked in a lot of basements that you just can't get the heat low because the foundation wall's in the way, or there's other problems, so they have the heat coming out of the ceiling, and there's a 20 degree temperature variation between the floor and the ceiling. It's not very comfortable to sit down and in a rec room down in a basement and enjoy watching a TV or listening to music or whatever.
And then if it gets wet,
that's a whole different issue. If you got carpet on the floor and it gets wet, be prepared to tear it out and get rid of it. Is this electric floor material rated to be able to handle moist environments?
You know, I haven't even thought of that. And obviously, with the rains, I need to ask the installer of that question, or at least
go to their website.
Manufacturers.
Yeah, go to their website and read up everything you can on it, because there are products that can handle it. There's preparations that you can do for electric floor heating. I mean, we put floor heating in roll-in bathrooms for wheelchair patients all the time, and so there are things that you can do, but that you want to be very, very cautious about those two things.
And they've got a website. I'm just on their website right now. Okay. There's lots of information on the website, so you might want to take a look at it. And if you're going to have a wet basement ever.
Yeah, if it's wet, you got to be very careful and make sure that it's wired up properly.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. Christina in Glenwood City is up next. Hi, Christina.
Hi there. Thank you. I have two questions. I'm installing 3-rail vinyl fencing for livestock into clay soil and going 3 feet deep. Do you recommend filling with lime rock or concrete?
There are lots of manufacturers of PVC fencing, and you really need to look at what those manufacturers are saying. Some of them are PVC over wood, some of them are hollow PVC, and they have very different requirements. And then the type of livestock also makes a difference. So get the manufacturer and go to their website, and every manufacturer that I know has downloadable installation instructions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And then we need to replace the roof due to this recent hail damage. And I was considering steel. What can you tell me about that?
Steel roofing.
Right.
How old is your house, Christina?
Oh, 12 years old.
Okay. And it's fairly square then. That is, it's not things. You know, you get these very old houses where things are a little crooked and the roof has deflected a little bit, and you just
big belly in the middle of your
roof.
You
cannot get steel to work on an old house generally. But it sounds like on a new house there are a lot of different manufacturers. You're going to have to do some website research. The Kynar coated ones seem to be performing very, very well. You're going to be looking at significant expense. There are some roofers that pre-order the entire roof, which means that if they mismeasure one thing, it's a disaster. There are other large companies that actually show up with a semi at your place with a rolling mill, and they roll it out and form the metal right in your yard and put it up. So do a lot of research It certainly can work, but you need the right product and you need the right installer and you need the right warranty.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Sandy in, let's see, where are you calling from? Venda, is it? Hi, Sandy.
Yes, Venda.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome. I have a question. You were talking to someone earlier about fixing the slope in their yard, the, what was that, 5 inches, 10 feet out? It's the same type of thing I'm going to be doing. And my question regarding the job is, do you need to be concerned about the type of soil you get to do that? Does one type of soil work better than another when I call the place and say, send me a truckload?
I don't think so, Sandy, because what you're really dealing with is the surface runoff. And you're going to have grass or flower bed or mulch or something over the top of it. What is important is to get that half-inch per foot slope so that the water really wants to go downhill away from the house rather than into the soil.
Right.
Now, I certainly wouldn't use something like sand, something that's highly permeable. But typical black topsoil will work just fine.
Okay.
All right.
Just wanted to make sure I didn't get something that would not work good.
Don't get sand.
Okay.
All right. Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. And Tom in Little Chute, we go to you next. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Good morning.
Morning. What can we do for you?
I'm looking for some information on sub pumps and how I can possibly fix my slope of my pipe coming out of the house. It was put in, and it's pretty low to the ground, so I don't really have any gravity going the proper way. Summertime, I have no problem because I put an extension on it and stick it toward the front. So I have to go around the corner of the structure. In the wintertime, the pitch is very little that it can freeze up, and I got to babysit it. Some winters I'm lucky I don't have to do it at all, but some I have to take the flex hose off, and I bought a PVC that I put on, and then I got to babysit that maybe every day because it's cold and it'll freeze. So what I have seen before are people... a few that I know of that dug a hole, threw some gravel in, took a 55-gallon barrel, drilled holes in that, and put gravel around inside.
Yeah,
and they just let it go.
Well, that's basically a French drain, and you can make that any size you want, but it's basically a buried a drum with a bunch of holes in it that is filled full of gravel so that it doesn't fill full of dirt. And you could do a combination of that, but when you don't have any way for water to drain out and it's freezing up on you, you've got to babysit the thing somehow. I mean, what else do you want to add, John?
Well, Tom, you can actually, rather than buy a barrel and cut holes in it, you can actually buy drains in all different sizes. Just call one of your local landscapers.
Yeah, they make them.
And then again, you're going to be able to get some installation instructions. You do need to dig these things down, because if they're only down 3 feet, your French drain can freeze solid in the winter. So do a little bit of research, but this is something that's put in pretty frequently. In fact, we put one in last week for a client here in Madison. So the landscaping companies have a lot more experience with them than I do, but our largest landscaping company here in Madison says that they work just fine and they recommend them.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, you would have to go down after
below the frost line. Yeah.
Correct.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, just get a hold of one of them and maybe talk about it. You've heard good things about them.
Yeah.
Yeah, they work fine. You know, if you can log how often your pump works, that may help your designer figure out what size French drain you want to use, too.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. John's involved with historic restoration, water issues, and he's also a licensed home inspector, one of our guests today. The other is Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison. Ken specializes in residential renovation projects. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have an issue with your house you'd like to have addressed, give us a call. Ken Adams and John Freiberger are here to answer your questions at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Paul in Phillips is up next. Hi, Paul. Oh, wait, hold on a second. Here, let's try that again. Paul, are you there?
Yep.
Okay, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
I had a question about radon. Recently tested pretty high for radon, and I was looking around the internet, and I actually went out and got a estimate for a mitigation system. But I was looking at, I found a product called Radon Seal, and it's kind of a waterproofer, and I was wondering if you heard of that and had any experience with that, if that's worth trying just to start with.
Paul, when did you test your house?
It was, the first test was about probably 2.5 months ago.
Okay, and you did two tests?
Yeah, the first one came up, it was about 23,
mm-hmm.
And the second one, after I had a person come in and give me an estimate,
mm-hmm.
They gave me another kit, and that one came back about 33.
About 33, okay. And do you have a drain tile and sump pump
drain
system?
Drain tile, no sump. It was supposed to be put in when I built the house in 2001, and they forgot it, and I've never had a problem with water or anything like that.
Okay, but you do have an open sump pit in your basement.
No, I don't.
You don't, but you have drain tile around the house?
Yeah.
So
they were supposed to put it in, and they forgot.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And I also have in-floor heating, radiant heating, and I have no idea where that's all laid out now to go ahead and drill my hole for my, you know, mitigation system. So I'm going to have to be careful, pretty much chisel it out, I think, hand chisel it.
All right, that's
the thing, though, with that should be right at the surface.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too.
They would have put your is it hot water or is it electric?
Yeah, and it's hot water, and I don't have a heat source hooked up to it yet.
I see. Oh,
that's
I see.
I
yeah, if you had
a heat
source.
But I have all the piping, you know, and it's filled mm-hmm. and everything, but no heat source yet.
Well, if you run hot water through it, you should be able to get fairly close to mapping it, you know, because the areas that are hottest will be the areas that the pipes will be located. One thing you could do if you run a lot of hot water through it and then get a somebody that does Focus on Energy, who will do a house energy audit for you, they could put an infrared camera on it, and they could pretty much map exactly where they are.
Okay, okay.
So, I'm sorry, did I interrupt you?
No. This is a complicated problem, and yeah. I think that's the right solution for finding out. It certainly would be nice if we could somehow connect to that drain tile so we could use that as part of the radon mitigation system by drawing air through it and depressurizing it. So I think that is a good step. With the levels that you have in the house, assuming they're fairly accurate, which is a 50-50 assumption at this point, I think that you're going to need more than just plain sealing. Now, sealing is one of the things that most radon mitigation people do. They do seal all of the cracks and seams in the floor, and that certainly helps. But if you're in real sandy soil up there, you just have so many places where it may be coming in, like through the snap ties in the walls, that we really need this sort of depressurized air system from underneath the floor to try to draw that radon out of the soil before it gets into the house.
Okay.
So I guess you're going to have to try to find the drain tile so that you can connect a fan to it.
Okay.
The other thing to think about in your house is the number of air changes that you need in the basement, what you've got for mechanical ventilation system. You may need to put in a heat recovery vent system so to increase the air changes in the house. So consider not just sealing and collecting mitigation, but also consider dilution by increasing the number of air changes in the house so that you've got a safe environment. The other thing that you may wish to think about doing is doing a 6-month test, which really should go from midsummer to midwinter or midwinter to midsummer, and that'll give you more accurate results.
Okay, and I see there's like an electronic meter that will test it. Is that something worth maybe getting, almost like a carbon monoxide, but it's radon?
The problem is that you need time. You really need part of the cooling system, part of the cooling period of the year, part of the heating part of the year, and the part of the year where you're really not doing much of anything, because you're going to find that the radon is going to go up and down with the seasons pretty dramatically.
Okay.
And if you do a 6-month test, that gives you a much better idea of what your average in your house really is. And there's a big difference, obviously, between 23 and 33.
Yeah.
And it'd be nice to know which of those are you fighting against. Are you trying to mitigate 33, or is it 23, or is it maybe actually more like 16? You're really not going to know. You can go ahead and get mitigating, but go ahead and get a 6-month test started.
All right.
Okay. Sounds good.
Thanks, Paul. Thank you very much for calling. Nancy in Salem is up next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have two questions. One is, we got a mailing for an interlock lifetime roof system. It's supposed to be a permanent system, and I'm wondering if you know anything about that or if it's worth it, because I'm sure it's more expensive. And my second question is, we have a two-story house, and around the whole two sides of the home were built a porch, which is only one story. We want to make that part of a living space, so we want to heat it somehow, something maybe freestanding, but it has to be ventilated. I'm wondering if it has to be ventilated above the second story. And I'm also wondering, if something that might not be an eyesore, because it is in the front of the house that where we would put a freestanding, you know, unit of some sort.
Okay. So you've got a porch. It's an enclosed porch right now?
Pretty much. It really needs to be insulated. At one point it was a total windows, but through the years they've sided over half of the windows. And, you know, it stays fairly warm. We've insulated the flooring and underneath.
Great. What kind of windows? Are they just storm windows?
They're nothing.
So you're not going to use this room year-round. You just want a little supplemental.
Well, actually, we'd like to replace the windows and tear out part of the, you know, house supported, of course. But because we did that around another part of our home, which worked out very well.
Uh-huh.
But we would like to make it part of the living room. Yeah.
Oh, so you want to open up the wall a little bit and that sort of thing. Well, people do that all the time. The critical thing is to make sure your structural supports for the second floor and for the first floor are adequately, you know, sized and installed. And definitely you'll need to upgrade your windows. But with regard to heat, there's a couple things you can do. If you're existing, if you insulate the room and make it really, you know, well insulated, you know, just like the rest of the house, you may be able to extend your ducting if you've got hot forced air heat. You may be able to extend that right into the room.
Okay.
If you can't do that because, say, there's a foundation wall in the way or some other reason or it's undersized, you can supplement it with a heat source like, you know, either electric floor heat. You don't really want to use electric baseboard heat. That's very inefficient heat. A gas stove, that side vent gas fireplace kind of thing. If
okay, well, that is the question. Mm-hmm. Doesn't it have to have a chimney?
No, they've got some lovely ones out there that side vent, and you just have to have a minimum distance from windows and openings. Some units are 18 inches below a window minimum and 12 inches to the side. Other units are a little bit more. So each manufacturer has a little bit different requirements, and you have to follow their instructions, but you have to also pay attention to each individual manufacturer. But there's some lovely ones out there that are very efficient if all you need to do is tweak the heat a little bit, and they can be very pretty.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And the interlock lifetime roof, have you heard of this?
Well, I'm not exactly sure what you mean.
Well, it's bestroof.com. They apparently don't really say on the mailing what the product is.
So
I'm sure they
like
want to come and tell it to me.
It's not an asphalt shingle.
It's something else. It
looks like it might be a plastic or something. It doesn't really say. It just says permanent. That's all.
Well, I'm not really sure. I don't know much about plastic roofs. I know that they're becoming more popular, and I could be wrong, but my initial reaction is prove it to me, because plastic on a roof where you're exposed to very dramatic changes in temperature and humidity and snow loads, it just seems a little bit, it seems like, you know, my yellow flag goes off. Do you have any experience?
Okay, well, here in the corner, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but here in the corner it does say interlock slate. I'm wondering if it could be real slate.
Well, if it's a real slate, that's a little bit different story. It's
big difference.
Yeah, I doubt whether it is.
It's probably slate-like product.
Yeah,
there.
Was it Echo Shakes makes a very nice green.
Is it for roofs or siding?
It's a roof, and they have several pictures of very, you know, involved roofs that are covered with it.
No, there. I have actually looked at some of the recent products. I have had the same experience you've had, Ken, with one that really I don't like at all, and it's curling. And I did take a look at the Echo Shakes with one of our local energy efficiency green gurus here, and he really believes them and wants to use them.
Mm-hmm.
The other, the old, you've seen the old interlock shingles.
Yeah, we call them T-shakes.
Right,
or
the old T's, and some of those things lasted 30 years.
Oh, now, they last longer than that. On barns, you'd see them 60 years old.
That's right, where there wasn't a lot of humidity. But, you know, considering that GAF and other companies now, I believe, are offering 50 in lifetime, it's possible that even in asphalt shingles, you could get a T-interlock with a lifetime.
I put a shingle on my roof that has a lifetime warranty. As long as I live in that house, that roof is guaranteed, so I paid them through the nose for it, but I installed it myself, so I didn't have to pay for the labor.
All right,
good luck
to
you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg is our guest here on the Ideas Network. We're talking wet basements, home renovation, repair, and inspection issues with Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg. Pleased to have these guys back and glad to have you listening in. Give us a call if you have a question about your home. The number is 1-800-642-1234. If you're in Madison, reach us at 263-1890. And let's go to Chuck first. Chuck, hello.
Good morning.
What can we do for you?
Well, I'm considering putting in a cement pad behind my garage.
Katie.
Hold on a second here. We're having a little crosstalk issue here that I need to deal with. There we go. Okay, go ahead.
I want to put in a cement pad behind my garage.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
The garage was built about 25 years ago. It's got a footing under it. And I've been researching how much gravel I should put under there, and I'm getting a lot of different figures. I've talked to the local cement people, and they vary. So I'm wondering what your fellows would recommend there.
Well, the first thing that you want to do is you want to excavate out any topsoil and make sure that you're sitting on subsoil and not organic matter. And
right.
once you do that, what we normally do is, what are you going to use it for, first of all?
Keep the grill back there.
Oh, you're not going to drive back there?
No, it's behind the garage. My wife is thinking about putting a rain barrel in.
Okay. Oh, so not a lot of load.
No.
You'd probably be just fine with, say, 6 to 8 inches of 3/4 inch stone. Crushed stone would probably be just fine. Tamp it down really good. You could probably get away with the same amount of sand if you lay your sand down, rake it out real nice, and then water it down 3 or 4 times so it packs down, and then pour on top. Are you going to pour the thing yourself, or are you going to contract it out?
No, I'm going to do it myself.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I would recommend. What are your contractors telling you?
Oh, anywhere from you don't need anything, you can just pour, you can, you know, take out the grass and the sod,
mm-hmm.
and then you can just pour right on the soil.
Well, you know, you could do that, but you'd be better off to have some kind of base, so I wouldn't go that route.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. Now, my neighbor, we're going to get together and, you know, order the concrete.
Oh, I
see. So he's going to do a driveway, and he's putting his right on the bare ground. But he's going to get the, what is it called, 6-bag mix with the fiber.
Uh-huh.
Does that make any difference?
Well, it does. It is stronger, but I don't recommend, and I don't know anybody that recommends putting a driveway on bare ground up here. You know, I mean, inorganic soil without some sort of a base, a gravel base, or
would the gravel base be the same for a sidewalk, 6 to 8 inches?
No, you don't need that much. A sidewalk, you only need
3 inches.
I don't know what. Yeah, wouldn't you say, John? Three inches probably be plenty.
Yeah,
that's probably all you need on the back if all you're going to do is stand on it and serve drinks.
Okay. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Jim in Stone Bay is up next. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Yeah, I've got mold in my attic, and what I'd like to know is the different ways that contractors come and get rid of the mold, and then if this is something that a homeowner could tackle themselves, what would you need to do, and how would you do it?
Well, the best information, there's two places you get information on mold, Jim. One is you can go to the EPA, and the EPA actually has a guidebook for mold removal. And you can also go to the City of New York Public Health Department, and they have a mold removal guide. And they will tell you what they feel it's safe for an amateur to tackle, and they also will tell you when you should take out the yellow pages and call a remediation specialist. So if you look at those two sources, that should give you a lot of information, Jim. But the other thing you've got to do is you've got to get rid of the moisture that's causing the mold to form. Do you know why it's been getting wet up there?
There's not enough attic vents. I know that. That's also my bathroom fan was venting into the attic, which I'm changing that too. So
great. Yeah, get rid of those attic venting problems. If you want to research attic venting a little bit, there's a great website called CoraVent, CORA-A-Vent.com. Cross-sectional drawings. Real easy to fill in forms about how much venting you need for your house, but get that taken care of, and check those two websites, and that should should put you on the road.
Okay. What do you think about the power vents? What's your opinion on those?
They're good if you like a fire in your attic. attic gets up to 160 degrees, and then this electric vent goes on. If you have a properly vented attic with low venting and high venting, you simply don't need a power vent. So why spend extra money on electricity to do what nature is going to do through convection?
Okay.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much for your call. And John in Danbury is up next. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
My question is about spray insulation in the attic space. I used to be a contractor, and I was actually a home inspector for a while, so I'm familiar with all the lingo. But I just started looking into this, and I found a Yellow Pages ad with a description of something called isonine spray foam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What is it? I haven't been really keeping up on this stuff. So what is it, and what's the difference? And they're of course saying how much better it is, and it has a little Energy Star emblem on the ad and all that. I'm just unfamiliar with that particular one.
Yeah, John, do you know about it?
Isonine's been around at least 15 years, maybe 20, isn't it, Ken?
Yeah, it's been around quite a while.
Yeah, it's a franchise system, so there are trained applicators in various parts of the state. I can't remember offhand what the R value per inch is. I'm thinking it was like 5.2 to 6 or something. Not quite as efficient as the newer urethane sprays. But I believe that it off-gasses only water vapor, doing this from memory, because we haven't used it for a couple of years because we pretty much switched to urethane. But it certainly has been around for a long time, John, and I have never seen any problems with it. You know, unlike the old urea formaldehyde foams that shrunk and failed and off-gassed and did all kinds
sure.
of nasty things.
Well, I'm familiar with polyurethane, and I've seen many jobs with that, and that's what I was going to use, but I guess I had seen these ads for this type of foam. I just didn't know. Is it expense-wise about the same, or?
I think that's actually a little bit less expensive, but check to see whether it's an open cell or a closed cell, whether it works as a vapor barrier as well as a thermal and wind barrier.
Yeah.
So do a little comparative research on, and there's a lot of foams out there and new ones coming out all the time, including. Now I think we have some soybean oil ones. If you want to stay with green construction,
yeah.
Huh? Is there a website for such things?
Oh, there are lots.
I'm sure there are, but I mean, is there one that reviews the performance or?
Well, I think you can go to. Is it greenconstruction.com?
I think it's Green Construction or Green Building Council.
Green Building Council.
Yeah, Green Building that, Council
something like that.
Have for you.
Oh, okay.
Check that out, and also go to the Journal of Light Construction. You could probably just type in Journal of Light Construction or JLC.
Okay.
And they have lots and lots of articles. And if you're not a subscriber, you can read the summaries, or for a small fee, you can buy a particular article, and they're usually really, really good and made for the professionals. I did talk to an architect recently who was telling me that he had read some research that the I keep wanting to say asinine. It's isonine. Sorry about that.
I hope that's not an opinion.
No, right? It's not. Not at all. But he was saying that he had read some reviews that some reports that and testing that they have discovered some premature degradation of its insulation values.
Okay.
And so you might want to just do a little research before you make your final decision. Now, I don't know if that was an isolated incident, an isolated study, or if that
okay.
is something.
Okay. Well, to be honest, I'm leaning toward the polyurethane just because I'm familiar with it, and it's, you know, from everything I've heard, it has a very good reputation and seems to do the job.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is petroleum-based product, so it's not going to be cheap.
Well, of course not. I mean, and it's a smaller building I'm in. It's partially an old lake cabin,
mm-hmm.
And that's the reason why I'm using that on the floor of the attic, because there's just the way it is. There's no way to get a vapor barrier without dismantling it, and Mama says no. So,
yeah.
You know, so I've got to suck out all the insulation that they've dumped up in there over the years.
You clean it
out real well.
Oh, God.
I know.
Jeez, that's a six-pack project.
Yeah, at least. John, good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Nancy in East Troy, you're up next. Hi, Nancy.
Hi. I'm calling because we have an early 1900s quarry stone-built home. It's a two-story home. My husband had to dig out the dirt basement, and he poured cement and cemented the whole basement floor. About 30 years ago, but now the story quarry stone wall seemed to be, and this is not just because of the latest rain, every time we have a rain of any abundance at all, we have water seeping and coming in through and around these stones that seem to have somehow or other ways of the water to get through. We have a sump pump, we have no gutters, but we have a wide overhang, and we have a cistern, but we don't use that. Any suggestions on how we can do what we can do possibly to get the water from coming in every time it rains?
Yeah, we're doing one of these right now. We're doing an 1852 stagecoach in, and it is complicated.
Uh-oh.
The problem is, once you dig up the wall, you find that the wall is very, very rough.
Yeah.
So we've had to come in and tuck point the entire basement wall, and then we will be spraying our contractor would be spraying a waterproofing over it and then putting a layer of clay over it as well.
Oh.
These old rough foundations can be managed, but it can get to be rather expensive, and you need to have a firm that actually knows what they're doing.
Okay.
They have to use the correct mortar, which is a lime-based mortar, not a Portland cement mortar.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to do a good job of applying that. They have to be careful with their spray, and they have to be careful with the bentonite and the drainage board.
Mm, okay.
So it can be done, but it tends to be a rather expensive project.
Mm-hmm.
I would say you're probably looking at $100 to $120 per lineal foot.
Okay. Okay. That's quite expensive. We were wondering, too, like we dug around the bottom of the laid tile, if that would help or anything like that. But it just comes right through the walls.
Yeah, if you lay tile on the inside, it's going to collect the water, so it's uh-huh. going to run through the wall, and there's nothing particularly wrong with that.
Uh-huh.
These old wall systems take a huge amount of abuse.
Right.
And so if it's just a medium annoyance that it comes in, go ahead and collect the water into a sump pit and pump it out. That's certainly going to be a much
cheaper,
less expensive alternative.
I'm just worried that the walls might cave in or something. Our walls are all a good foot and more deep. They're thick. I mean, the walls
they're
are.
They're probably 18 to 24 inches.
Yeah, they're real thick walls.
I am constantly amazed at the kind of lateral pressure that these walls will take.
They will. Okay. Yeah. All right.
All right.
All our windowsills are like, I mean, I can put flower. We have a television set in the kitchen sitting in the windowsill. That's how deep the windowsill is. Everybody says, I'm envious of you.
it sounds like a great house, Nancy.
Well, thank you. Okay, well, I just wanted to know if there was something we could do to stop the water. We got two dehumidifiers going in the basement, and it still keeps coming in, you know.
Well, I think John came up with some good advice
right.
for you there.
Right, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Ann in Port Washington, it's your turn. Hi, Ann.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My question involves our house is just about 3.5 years old, and we had a problem basically from day one that we just figured out the answer to and got it fixed, but there's some residual, if you will. We have a bedroom that is immediately adjacent to a bathroom and had water running into the bedroom window at odd times. The problem turned out to be the bedroom has a cathedral sloped ceiling, and they vented the bathroom fan out across the top of the bedroom and then out the side of the house. And what was happening was condensation was forming up in that pipe, which was laying right below the roof line with no insulation around it, freezing, and when it would thaw, it sent water out. The fan has been revented, so that part of the problem is resolved. But I smell something in that room. I've been telling our builder this for years, possibly mold. And I guess what I'm interested in knowing is, should I be pulling down some drywall to look at what's behind the wall around that window and try to see where this odor is coming from?
Well, probably. But the first thing you could do is to, if you can get up in there, is to look at it from above, and maybe you can get a sense, or your contractor could get up there and peel back the insulation and see if there's water that has been causing mold to develop in the on the ceiling. So you probably have a lot of moisture that's been sitting there for a long time, and you may have some mold growing in there.
Okay.
One can hope, Anne, that the mold is in a really isolated area, because if your house is 3.5 years old, they probably wrapped at least all of the exterior walls and hopefully the ceiling of the bedroom with a plastic vapor barrier.
Well, that's why it's funny that it would smell in the bedroom.
But if there's interior walls,
plastic vapor barrier, and there's no visible sign of damage on the drywall ceiling right above the window or around the windows. When this water came through, it actually ended up running off the windowsill. Of course, it was in a bedroom we don't use, so we didn't even know this problem was happening at first, and it took so long to find it because, you know, they shot water at the window, they tried everything before they realized that this fan venting was the problem. But the water, you know, would come off the sill of the window. It definitely came down the drywall. The carpet got wet.
Okay.
That's a lot of water. You
know, and of course, the window is penetrating the vapor barrier, so if it's leaking through the head of the window, it's going to get into the wall.
Sure, it could be right at the top.
Right. So it sounds like, though, it's probably in a fairly isolated area and probably right around that window. So maybe cut a small piece out there and take a look at it, and maybe you're going to end up replacing one sheet of drywall in the window area, and that will take care of it.
Okay. Yeah, we tried to look at it from above. My husband tried to get back there, but couldn't get all the way back.
You wouldn't be able to see if it's going down the wall, because there's a top plate at the top of the wall restricts your vision. So you'd actually. What kind of siding do you have?
We do have. It's the fiber cement board.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, if you have vinyl, maybe you can go from the outside and look, and that would save your wall if that's not the problem. But yeah, chances are you'll have to cut a little hole in the wall and do what John was just saying. So good luck.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Put the hole in there where you want to hang a picture.
There you go.
Charles in La Crosse, your turn. Hi, Charles.
Hi. I was just wondering if I need to do something with my chimney. I have gas heat, and I also have a gas water heater. So I have these pipes. I think they call them a flue or something.
Mm-hmm.
That go up the chimney, and it's got a cap for the pipe, I think, but the chimney top is not totally capped. And for some reason, it's getting sand or something in the chimney, because I opened up the clean-out chute, and I'm finding sand in there. And I was just wondering, is that sand going to deteriorate the pipe where I get carbon monoxide in the house?
Do you have... do you have a chimney liner inside the chimney?
Well, it would be the liner for the piping. I mean, I guess the liner would be the pipe that goes up through the chimney.
Well,
is that what it is?
No.
Well, it not necessarily, because that could be a ceramic material, or it could be a steel or aluminum pipe that goes inside that's been retrofitted. How long have you lived in the house?
About 19 years.
And did you ever have someone reline your chimney?
No.
Okay. Have you had your furnace and
we had to put a new furnace in.
You know what?
Right after we moved in, about a year after we moved in, but nothing's been done to the chimney.
And it's a masonry chimney.
Whatever, the chimney block or whatever.
Sure. So it's masonry chimney.
Okay.
Quite often, and you see this a lot when people side vent their furnaces and you just ventilate their water heater. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure what's going on, but something to do with the unburned gases and stuff. It sort of eats away at the mortar and starts rotting your chimney out from the inside very slowly over time. And that's one of the reasons that you need to have some sort of a chimney liner. And they make them out of aluminum, stainless steel. I think you can get galvanized steel, but it's not worth it. I mean, if you're going to do it, spend the money for the stainless steel one, and that would be capped. That's one issue. That would have a little cap on top. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. And then if your chimney doesn't have if the top of your chimney has a chimney cap that's deteriorating or not solidly placed around that liner or the ceramic that the liner is in, you'll want to have that replaced. And you can buy these things. Chimney caps, I don't think, are $100 or so, and they can be put on by a mason. Mm-hmm. And that could be done all at the same time.
Well, do I need to have the chimney cleaned out and have somebody look to see if there is a liner in there?
Yeah, that's probably the first thing to do, and you could check to see if there's a chimney liner in there and go from there. A heating contractor, a reputable heating contractor, could climb up there, take a look at it for you for a small fee.
So you would have to, like, look into the chimney from the top, then?
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know if you'd have to disconnect wherever the connection for the chimney is at the bottom to get in there. It might be easier just to throw a ladder up and go up on the roof and look down.
Yeah, so it's possible I don't even have a chimney liner then?
If you've never had it done, they probably didn't do it before. Yeah, that would have put
initially,
you in the 80s, and they probably didn't do it back in the 80s. You know, that was when they were first starting to wise up to this problem.
Oh, because
we were developing more energy-efficient furnaces and heating units and water heating units back at that time. And
yeah, because the house had gas furnace in it when we moved in, but the heat exchanger got bad
on
it.
Yeah, that's how they go.
We replaced the furnace, but I don't know if they ever put a liner in when they put first gas furnace in, and probably the first gas furnace might have been, 20 or 30 years old.
Yeah, older than that.
Sure.
Yeah, just go ahead and call a reputable heating contractor, and I'm sure that they can tell you right away if you need it, and they can price out a new one. They're not that expensive. Good luck to you.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. I appreciate your call. And you guys, I always ask if you guys have websites or not, and you don't have a website, but
I have a website.
You've got a website.
I do. Mine is
your website. I can't believe it.
Mine is adamsofmadison.com.
Adamsofmadison.com. Yeah. John, have you got one?
I still do not have one set up, Larry. we are willing to answer questions on historic restoration if they just email us at frei@chorus.net. And someday I will get a website set up with some of the most frequently asked questions, like old-fashioned mortar mixes and such.
Yeah, that would be a very useful thing. I would go to your website.
And I'll link to you, Ken.
Sounds good.
All right. Ken Adams of Adams Design and Construction in Madison, specializing in residential renovation projects. John Freiberger of Freiberger Associates of Fitchburg, involved with historic restoration water issues, and he's also a licensed home inspector. Nice to have them with us, and they'll be back again, and we'll talk with them once more. And I hope you'll be back, but I also hope you'll stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.